never intended to be a biography of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The Torah does not tell us how Avram Avinu met his wife. The Torah does tell us how Yitzchak got to marry Rivka, how Yaakov got to marry his wife, how Moshe Rabbeinu met his wife. The Torah doesn't tell us how Avram Avinu met his wife. So there was a famous Chassidish Rebbe, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditcheva, who writes in his Sefer HaChumash, the Torah is not a biography of the Ovis. The Torah only tells us things that are relevant to us. So he says Avram Avinu must have met his wife at a New Year's Eve party or a Thanksgiving party or something. He wasn't Jewish, and it wasn't a Jewish marriage. It wasn't a Yiddish Shidduch. So it's not worthy of being described in the Chumash. But Yitzchak and Yaakov Avinu, Moshe Rabbeinu, those were Jewish Shidduchim. So the Torah describes the way they met. We should try to learn a little bit from their Shidduchim. In fact, in the beginning of Chumash Mos, the Torah tells us, Vayelech Ish Min Beis Levi, Beikach Es Bas Levi, that Moshe Rabbeinu's father Amram, the Ibn Ezra interprets the pasuk like this, lived on one side of the town, and he walked to the other side of the town to date his wife. And the Torah tells us about the dating. It was a Torah Dika dating. So that's why it's worthy of being mentioned in the Chumash. I remember I once attended a wedding. A boy from NCSY was getting married to a girl from NCSY. I came a little late, so I was sitting in the back of the audience. I was sitting next to Rabbi Stolper, who used to run NCSY. He was sitting next to a non-Jewish person. So at the end of the whole wedding ceremony, the non-Jew says, "The groom didn't kiss the bride. What's going on?" So Rabbi Stolper leans over to him and he says, "Not only didn't he kiss the bride, he never touched the girl. The whole time that they were dating, he never kissed her, he never touched her." He said, "What kind of dating is this?" He says, he wrote a whole book. He says, "I'm going to send you a copy of my book about the Jewish way in dating and marriage." It's a different way, In Parshas Bereishis, the Torah tells us that God created Adam Arishan, and then he shows him, he passes all the animals in front of Adam Arishan, and it sounds as if Adam Arishan is, Baruch Shalom is trying to see to it that Adam Arishan should marry a hippopotamus, or a horse, or a cow, or a duck, a kachke. What do you mean? How? It says, Ula Adam Lamotza Eze Kenekta. He looked at all the animals, didn't find the Shidduch. What was the Havamina? Why would he think he's going to find the Shidduch? So I remember when we studied Paradise Lost. Who wrote? John Donne, I think? Milton wrote it, yeah. So he raises the issue. Milton raises the issue. So he says, the Ribbono Shel Olam was kibitzing with Adam Arishan. He's joking with him. So the Ravid lived in the days of the Rishayim. The Ravid wrote a book on the laws of Taras HaMishpacha called Balei HaNefesh. In the introduction to his book, he raises this issue. And he says he wasn't kibitzing with Adam Arishan. There never was a Havamina. There never was a thought that he's going to marry a hippopotamus or a horse or a cow or something. He told Adam Arishan, look if you'll find a female human being. And he looked and he looked, and he didn't find a female human being. So Adam Arishan said, how come? What are you trying to bring out? So the Ribbono Shel Olam said, this is interesting. The Ravid lived so many centuries ago when they just started doing organ transplants on people. So they realized that there's an issue of rejection, that the body has a nature of rejecting foreign matter. So the Ribbono Shel Olam tells Adam Arishan, I want to have a marriage that the husband and the wife should blend in together. And if I would have created Adam and Chava separately, they would have, each body would reject the other one. They wouldn't be able to blend in together. I have to create Chava from Adam, so it won't be foreign matter. And when he showed him all the animals, he didn't. He said, look, every animal has a male and a female. I created male and female independently. There's no institution of marriage by the behemoth. That's what the Ravid writes. I don't know if it's true. That's what the Ravid writes. There's no institution of marriage by the animals, only by human beings. Because by the human being, the Ribbono Shel Olam created Chava from Adam that the body shouldn't reject the other one. I remember there was a couple in Queens. We weren't so close with them, but the grandfather always used to come visit in Washington Heights. grandfather was a minkacha from Europe, and he had a daughter who lived in the Heights, so he always would talk to us. So this couple was married for over 20 years. They didn't have any children. Finally, they were blessed with a child. So I remember when they had the bris, it was such a big simcha. Everybody came from all over. Then when the child was bar mitzvah, the doctor came from Seattle. It was a Jewish doctor. He came from Seattle to celebrate the bar mitzvah with the parents. Everybody came. And we ate all the meals in the Queens Jewish Center. So every meal, they had to sit at a different table to get to meet everybody else. So one of the meals, we were sitting next to the doctor at the table. So the doctor was telling us that the human body has a tendency of rejecting all foreign matter. And the doctor still, this was a long time ago, said the world of medicine still doesn't understand why the female body doesn't reject the Zera Habal. Why is not considered foreign matter? He said, that's a miracle. That's a pella, because the human body always rejects something that's foreign matter. So that's the Ravid, who lived centuries ago. So that's why the Ribbono Shel Olam had to create Chava from Adam, that the two should be able to blend in together. Very fascinating. We have a mitzvah, Pirev Yerivya. We should all have children. The nature of the mitzvah changed at Maimon Har Sinai. Before Matan Torah, the mitzvah was required of everybody in the world was obligated to have children. And the nature of the mitzvah was Puruvu Umilus Ha'oretz, to populate the world, B'chipshua, and to conquer the whole world, to take over. By the time it came Maimon Har Sinai, the Ribbono Shel Olam apparently decided there's enough population in the world, he doesn't need any more people. So he repeated the mitzvah Piruvia for the Jewish people only, and the nature of the mitzvah changed, that the nature of the mitzvah is no longer to populate the world, but rather to transmit Jewish values to the next generation. If a person, let's say a person will marry a non-Jewish girl and have children, the children will be non-Jewish, he will not be in fulfillment of Piruvia. Before Matan Torah, he would be in film. Puruvu Milas Haaretz, he populated the earth. After Matan Torah, the nature of the mitzvah is to have your own children, preferably, and to transmit Jewish values to those children. If a person has children and he doesn't educate them, doesn't give them Torah education, he's not really a fulfillment of the mitzvah Puruvu Rivya. The Tanakh tells us in the Sefer Melachim that Chizkiyahu HaMelech took sick, and Yishai HaNavi came to be Mevakeh Chayla. So usually, when someone is sick, you come to be Mevakeh Chayla, so you wish him you should get better, everything should be okay. So Yishai HaNavi comes to be Mevakeh Chayla, he says you're going to die because you didn't get married, you didn't have any children. That's what he pops him over the head. You're going to die because you never had children. So Chizkiyahu HaMelech says, but I saw Beruach HaKodesh, that if I'll have children, they'll be Ovdei Avodah Zarah. He had a son, Menashe, who was an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So I won't be in, even if I have children, I won't be in fulfillment of the mitzvah, because I will not succeed in transmitting Torah values to the son. It's going to be an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So many Mefarshim learned that his argument was correct. It was a valid argument. If you have children and they worship Avodah Zarah, you're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. So it's just he'll just be engaged in an act of futility if he's going to get married and have children. So Yishai Nabi told him, there's something incorrect over here. So some Mefarshim say that the Gemara has one possibility. Maybe Menashe was Chozer B'tshuva before he died. So he didn't, Chizkiyahu HaMelech didn't have the whole story. Others say, even if Menashe didn't do tshuva, the Gemara is not sure whether he did tshuva, even if he didn't do tshuva, but you're not allowed to paskin shailas based on Ruach HaKodesh. You're obligated to get married and have children in order to transmit Jewish values. You know Ruach HaKodesh, that's not going to work. You're not supposed to paskin shailas like that, but in principle, it really is correct. This was an issue under the communists. The Jewish people knew for sure that they would not be able to educate them. It would be impossible, b'derech hateva, to transmit Jewish values to the children under the communists. So the shaila was, are they obligated to have children? So it could be that not. It's not that they knew Baruch HaKodesh. You knew based on history. They just send you to Siberia. They'll kill you. They'll put you in prison if you teach Judaism to the children. So this is really the nature of the mitzvah. Pirei Rivya changed. After Matan Torah, the Gemara has a famous dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. If you have a non-Jewish couple and they had children, and then they all convert. So the halacha says that they're no longer related to each other. The Gemara has an expression, Gershin is Gayer, Kekotn Shanala Domi. When a non-Jew converts, so strictly speaking, biblically speaking, a brother can marry the sister because they're not related. With the Rabbanim, we don't permit it, but biblically they're allowed to marry. And two brothers can testify together in court. They're not considered brothers. And let's say when Mr. Trump should pass away, so his daughter doesn't get the Yerusha, because the daughter is no longer the daughter converted, the daughter is no longer related to the father. Midrabbanan, the Gemara says, we're afraid that the ger may decide to go back to his original religion in order to get a lot of money. So Midrabbanan, we said, let the ger get the Yerusha. But biblically, the ger doesn't get the Yerusha, because they're not related anymore. That's the klalu gershin is got kekut and shenala dam. So Rish Lakish is of the opinion that if you had a non-Jewish couple and they had children and then everybody, the whole family converts, so you're not a fulfillment of perura because they're not your children. So we don't paskin like that. We paskin like Rabbi Yochanan that one. We paskin that the father is in the fulfillment of the mitzvah, even though he's not related to the children anymore. So the Rambam writes, the simple reading of the Rambam is, he's only a fulfillment of Pirvi if the children also convert. But if the children remain non-Jewish, he didn't fulfill Pirvi. Kodematan Torah, the nature of the mitzvah was to populate the world, to populate the world with Jewish and non-Jewish children. But after Matan Torah, the whole nature of the mitzvah changed, only applies to the Jewish people now. The nature of the mitzvah is to transmit Jewish values to the next generation. In fact, the Gemara tells us that there was a Tana by the name of Ben Azai. He didn't have any children. The Gemara is not sure what the story was. Either he never got married, or he got married and got divorced the next day. He said marriage is not for him, and he never had any children. So the Rambam quotes this Gemara that if a person is just crazy about learning, and he just says the marriage is not for him, so he's not in violation of the mitzvah. So what if a person is crazy about learning? He doesn't daven, and he doesn't eat matzah on Pesach, doesn't shake a lulav, he doesn't sit in sukkah, he's crazy about learning. So we tell him, you're sinning. You have to take off time from learning and do all the mitzvahs. So why is marriage and having children different? So Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, he thought this was Pasha Pshat. Ben Azai was a teacher, he was a rabbi, he was teaching Torah to the public. He was transmitting Jewish values to the next generation. The mitzvah b'shlei Musa, the complete mitzvah, is to have your own biological children and to transmit Torah to your own children. If a person is unable to have his own children, so the Chafetz Chaim points out, many poskim say the same lahaloch, but the Chafetz Chaim points out the posik in the Haftorah on a tiny Sibur. Koyamar Hashem la'asor isim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells those who are unable to have their own children, they should be machazikim bivrisi, they should support yeshivas. If a person is single and he doesn't see he's getting married, so he should support yeshivas. He should see to it that Torah should be transmitted to the next generation. Even if he's not able to do it, let him support the yeshivas, but they are transmitting Torah to the next generation. So Ben Azai was in partial fulfillment of the mitzvah because he was teaching Torah to the public. The mitzvah b'shlei Musa is to have your own children. So that's what the Rambam quotes from the Gemara. He's not in violation. If the person is going to say he's crazy about learning, doesn't want to eat matzah, doesn't want to daven, he's not doing the mitzvah. So here he's doing the mitzvah in an incomplete form. But I'll call upon him, if you do the mitzvah in an incomplete form, then we don't have any tainus against you. So that's the nature of the mitzvah. Piriribia changed at the time of Matan Torah. The Torah tells us when the Ribbono Shel Olam created Chavo, it was for a double purpose, to make Ezer Kenegdo. So there's a famous interpretation from Rav Elvela Soloveitchik, who lived he lived through the war, and he lived in Yerushalayim in his last years. He points out Ezer Kenegda, he says, based on a Rambam in the Hakdama to the Pirush HaMishnayos, that Ezer means each one helps out the other. The husband, under a regular situation, the husband works for a living, and the wife raises the children, and the wife cooks the food, and so on. So if the husband would have to cook all the food and plant everything and harvest everything, you wouldn't be able to function. We have a lot of people. Everybody does part of the work. You have a company manufactures clothing. Another company manufactures furniture. Someone else builds houses. If the person would have to do everything himself, it would be overwhelming. So in a marriage also, the husband does part of the work and the wife does part of the work, and they save each other the job of doing all the work by themselves. So that's the idea of Ezer. Then you have Kenegdo, that man, if a person is all by himself, even if he has the ability to push a whole bunch of buttons and he can build his own house and he can make his own furniture and everything, but still he's gonna go out of his mind. He has no one to talk to. Human beings are social animals. They enjoy talking with others. The Rosh Hashanah had the institution of marriage, that it should be a kenegdo also. So these are the three inyanim of marriage. You want to have piriv rivya. It's understood that people get married because they want to have children. And you have the inyan of ezer to help each other out. Then you have the kenegdo. In the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramo and Ibn Ezra quotes Acherim HaKadmonim. In the earlier generations, the late Rishonim made a cherem against the husbands beating up their wives. And before they made the cherem, it used to be a mitzvah to beat up your wife. Or it wasn't a mitzvah, it was permissible. You're not allowed to beat up anybody. It says in the Chumash, even a person who deserved malchus, you're not allowed to hit him an extra lash. Jew or non-Jew, you're not allowed to hurt that. You're not allowed to hit anybody. So now there. So what do they mean? Acherim hakadmonim shelo lahakos asishtan. So this is a misunderstanding that a lot of people have. Acherim means a curse that's nichnas into the ramach ivarim. That's what the Gemara says. The word acherim, ches reish mem, the same letters as ramach. It's a curse that should seep in. The rabbis cursed him. He should drop dead. You're not allowed to hit anybody. But just because a person hits his wife, hits someone else, doesn't deserve to drop dead. So the rabbis, the early rabbis, made a cherem. They cursed the person who beats up his wife. He should drop dead. The same thing, there's a cherem there, Rabbeinu Gershom, not to divorce your wife against her wishes. Strictly speaking, min haTorah, if her husband gives his wife a get, and she doesn't want to get divorced, so he gives her the get against her wishes, he puts it in her hand, he puts it in her pocket, so they're divorced. So is that permissible, min haTorah? So on the Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Tshuvas HaRan. The Ran says, that's an avera min haTorah, to divorce your wife. He divorces his wife and he marries his secretary who's 25 years younger than him. So that's an Averim and Ateret. That's not permissible. It's just there never was a Cherim. There never was a curse that men should drop dead. So Rabbeinu Gershom felt it necessary to make a Cherim. He made a Cherim. Made a Cherim, you're not allowed to read someone else's mail. And before he made the Cherim, it was permissible to read someone else's mail. It was always also. A Cherim means a curse that the person should drop dead. That's not a Balaturim. That's a Gemara. The Gemara says the word Cherim is Ramach Oisius. The same letters as Ramach, it's a curse that should be nichnas into the Ramach Ivorim, that the person should die. Why is it an avera to give your wife a get against her wishes? So the Chachamim tell us that the relationship in Ram should be such that oyvishishta kegufay mechabda yosem igufay. We have the pasuk, we have to the racha kamoicha. So the Gemara does not understand the pasuk to mean that we have to love all the Jewish people to the same extent. I have to love my next door neighbor's wife to the same extent that I love my own wife. The Gemara understands it otherwise. The Gemara says different people to different degrees. Mechabda also, mechabda is a mitzvah, kavod habriyos. You don't have kavod habriyos equally to everybody. There's a din of kibbut aviyim, there's a din of kibbut talmid hachachamim, all different kvod hamelach, there are different degrees of kavod. So Gemara understands the different degrees of ahava b'hafta d'racha kamocha also. So Gemara understands that the deepest degree of ahava should be between spouses. The husband has to, he has to love his wife more than everybody else. The Gemara says you're not allowed to marry a girl. You shouldn't have a shidduch where you never met the girl before you get engaged. The Gemara says why? Because you may meet the girl. The same thing, the girl should marry without seeing the boy. Boy should marry without seeing the girl. When they meet each other, they may not be happy with what they got stuck with, if the parents arranged the shidduch. And then he won't be in fulfillment of the mitzvah, you have to racha kamecha. The Gemara understands the mitzvah and the pasuk to require that the husband has to have more ahava to his wife than to everybody else. So you have to make sure that you really love the girl in advance. The mechabda yosem igufa, he has to be mechabed his wife more than he's mechabed himself. What does mean mechabda? So some students in the yeshiva misunderstand it to mean you hold the door open for your wife that she should go first. Or you help her put on her kurt. Or she's sitting down, so you help her, you push the chair under the table. That's not enough. Mechabda means to spend money. if at the end of the year the boss gives me $1,000 bonus, and I don't know what to do with the $1,000, should I buy a fancy suit for myself, or should I buy a fancy dress for my wife? So if my wife already has 55 dresses and I only have 10 suits, so maybe I should catch up. Okay, but if we're both equal, if you have the $1,000 bonus, you're supposed to spend the money on your wife or whatever, buy your jewelry, whatever. Mechabdi Yosef Meguf means to spend money on your wife. And the Gemara tells us, Rava used to tell his students, Okiru Neshaychu Ke'echa Dit Tisasru, if you'll be mechabed your wives, it'll be a zgula for Ashiris. And he learns it out from the Pasuk, that when Avram Avinu went down to Mitzrayim, he says in the Pasuk, Ule Avram Heitiv Ba'afura, that I think Para Melech Mitzrayim gave a lot of money to Avram Avinu in the schus of Sarah. So the Gemara understands that to mean that if you mechabed your wife, it'll be a zgula for Ashiris. Our practice is, the common practice is that we get married under the chuppah by giving a ring. That's kiddushe kesef. Shove kesef is dina kikesef. How do you know that such a thing? And the Chumash doesn't really say. The Karaites don't believe in kiddushe kesef. There are different groups of karoim. They have African karoim and Asian karoim and European karoim. Each group has different shtick, but they have certain things in common. So one of the things they have in common is none of them believe in Kedusha Kesef. Because Kedusha Kesef, the Rambam quotes from the Gemara, Kedusha Kesef is only known through the Torah Shebal Peh, and the Karaites don't accept the Torah Shebal Peh. So we have a practice, the Rambam writes this, and he says, Kvanoga kol Yisrael lekadosh b'kesef. The meaning by the Jews is, what do you mean meaning by the Jews? Who's reading his book? The non-Jews are not reading. I mean, it's the meaning by the Orthodox Jews who do subscribe to the Torah Shebal Peh. We choose to get married with Kesef to demonstrate that we do subscribe to the Torah Shebal Peh. We have every so often, we have warm cholent on Shabbos. Well, you have to have warm cholent on Shabbos. So the famous statement of the Baal HaMor in the third Perek of Masechta Shabbos and Perek Kira, he says if a person, the laws of reheating food on Shabbos are complicated, and a lot of people don't know the dinim and they violate the dinim b'shogeg. So the Baal HaMor says, lest the person will think, Malon b'latzara azaz, why do I have to reheat the food? I'll eat cold cuts on Shabbos. I'll eat everything straight from the refrigerator. What do I need warm food? He says, no, if a person doesn't eat something warm on Shabbos, tzorch b'dika achrov, you have to check, maybe he belongs to the karoim. Because the karoite said, l'sevar esh b'chol mach v'sech, when he used to sit in the dark, and they didn't leave any fires on. So Friday night the food was warm because it was warmed up from Erev Shabbos. But Shabbos morning, there's no way the food can be warm from Erev Shabbos. So if one doesn't eat warm food on Shabbos in the daytime, you have to be choshed that maybe they belong to the Karaites. So you have a lot of things like that that we instituted to demonstrate that we do subscribe to the Torah Shabbat Pesach. So Kiddushe Kesef is one of them, the Rambam says. Kiddushe Kesef, the way we do Shove Kesef. Shove Kesef is Torah Shabbat Pesach on top of Torah Shabbat Pesach. And the first Mishnah in Kiddushin, all of the Rishonim discussed, how did the Tanaim know that Shove Kesef is Kekesef? So they all work hard on that. How do they know that? So it's Torah Shebal Peh on top of Torah Shebal Peh. So we demonstrate that we do subscribe to the Torah Shebal Peh. So where did they derive this from? There's an institution in Kiddushin Kesef, so it's learned off in the Gzera Shova. In Chumash Dvorim, it says when a couple gets married, the verb that's used is Kiyika Chishisha. The verb is Kicha. And when Avram Avinu lost his wife Sarah and he negotiated with the Bnei Ches to buy the Maros HaMachpelah, so it says, Vayikach es kalartza miyara, the verb kicha is used there. So that's what the Gemara says, there's a gzereshah, but kicha, kicha is the effort. Just like by Avram Avinu buying the Maros HaMachpelah, he bought it like they kesef, so too the person gets married like they kesef. So Rabbi Samson Reifel, her, I live in Washington Heights. So you can't speak without mentioning Rabbi Samson Reifel Hirsch. So Rabbi Hirsch has a beautiful essay where he says that the Apikursim used to make fun of the rabbis in the Talmud, the Maskilim, and the Apikursim used to make fun. The rabbis treat buying a wife like buying real estate. You buy a field and you buy your wife. You pay money to buy the field, you pay money to buy the wife. And they were making fun of the Talmud, why the Gemara learns that. So he says, that's not what the rabbis meant. The rabbis meant Avram Avinu loved his wife so much and respected her so much, even after she died, he spent a fortune of money. The Pasuk says he paid a fortune of money to buy a special kever Yisrael. A Jew is not allowed to be buried together with a non-Jew. The Jews are born differently, and they live differently, and they die differently, and they're buried differently. You're not allowed to bury Jews in a non-Jewish cemetery. You have to have it's a din of Kever Yisrael. So he spent a fortune of money, and they offered him. We respect you like a holy man. They offered Avraham Avinu, bury your wife wherever you want. He said, no. The Jews, everything is different by the Jews. We have to bury separately. And he paid a fortune of money because he loved and he respected his wife so much. So the rabbis wanted us to do like Avraham Avinu. We should respect our wives. We should love and respect our wives so much during their lifetime. Not that you buy a wife like you buy real estate. You should marry a wife like Avraham Avinu loved his wife. That he was prepared to spend so much money to be a mechaber's wife even after she passed away. While she was alive, he certainly was mechaber her much more. The meaning of kibud is different. The husband has an obligation, mechaber yosem migufoy. And the Rambam quotes from other Gemaras that the wife has an obligation to be mechaber the husband. So if I have an obligation to be mechabed, you have an obligation to mechabed me. So we cancel each other out and should be awash. So no one's going to be mechabed anybody. So the Rambam explains it means a different thing. The husband has to be mechabed the wife, to spend money on the wife that she should feel good. The wife has to be mechabed the husband. That just means she should look up to the husband. That's why the Gemara recommends you should marry a girl who's on a lower level of society than you. Nechos dargo, v'nesiv itza. In the past generation, there was a famous girl from a very prominent rabbinic family who married a very big Talmid Chacham, but her husband was 25 years younger than his father-in-law, so the father-in-law was a famous guy. So the wife never respected her husband. Her husband was a world-famous Talmid Chacham, but he didn't compare to her father, so she never respected him. So that's terrible. So that's what the Rambam quotes the Gemara. You should always marry a girl who's a lower level of society than you, so she'll look up to the husband. A normal, happy marriage is when the wife looks up to the husband. There has to be something to look up to. Okay? So the husband should see to it as what to look up to, and the wife should. So that it's a different understanding. The wife has to be mechaber, the husband means covered, to look up to the husband, to respect him like a sar, like a prince of a person, and the husband has to be mechaber the wife, means spend money on the wife to make her happy. It's not the same thing. Otherwise, there'll be a contradiction between the two. In marriage, there are reciprocal obligations between the husband and the wife, and a lot of times there's friction in the marriage because the husband doesn't realize what his obligations are, and the wife doesn't realize what her obligations are. If people would understand what the obligations are, a lot of times there would be a little more shalom bayis. So in the Chumash, the Torah tells us that there's an obligation of sher ksus v'yoinim. So sher ksus, poshe pshat, means ksus, the husband has to buy clothing for the wife. And sher means he has to support the wife, food. So the Tosfos has two opinions. One opinion is, if the husband has money, so he's obligated to spend money on the wife's food and clothing. If he doesn't have money, let's say he doesn't have a job, so he heard there's a bris in that shul, so he goes in the morning, goes to that bris, so he eats a big breakfast. Then he has his opinion of Ben, tomorrow goes to the opinion of Ben. The wife is home, he doesn't buy any food, no clothing, he doesn't have a job. He always snores a meal. How's the wedding over here? So he goes to the wedding uninvited. So one opinion in Taisa says he's not mukhiyev to get a job. If he has money, he's mukhiyev to spend the money on the wife or the food and the clothing and the apartment. But if he doesn't have the money, not mechuyev. The other opinion in Tosfos says that that's an embarrassment to the Jewish people, to the Jewish religion, to say such a ridiculous thing. The husband is not mechuyev to get a job. Of course he's obligated to get a job. So we in the Ksuba, when we're all of those of us who are married, so in the Ksuba we write, Ano efloch ve'oika ve'ezen, I will get a job and I will support my wife. See, even according to that opinion in Tosfos, that the husband is not obligated to get a job, but once he signs such a contract, so he's obligated to get a job and to support the wife. To what extent is he obligated to support the wife? Wife wants to eat out every night in a restaurant. Breakfast, lunch, and supper. Three times a day she wants to eat out in a restaurant. So the Gemara has a klal, oy leima v'ene yaredes imoy. Let's say the both families were wealthy, the girl's family, boys are both wealthy, and the couple is also wealthy. Everybody's doing very well. So in the boy's family, they always meant Eretz Yisrael for Pesach and for Sukkot. In the girl's family, they were wealthy, but they didn't do that. Or one of them had a full-time maid in the house all the time, sleeping maid. Or one of them had 3 days a week they had a maid. The other one, they had once a week. They didn't have three times a week. They didn't have any maid. The mother did all the work. So if the children can afford it, so the wife is entitled to the higher of the two standards of living. That's what the Gemara calls oile imo, ein yoredes imo. Whichever is the higher standard of living, if the husband can afford it. If the husband can't afford it, then that's scandalous that the wife should be demanding of the husband that he should get another job in order to make extra money, in order to buy her fancier dresses. That's not right. The Chofetz Chaim was always complaining that the women are too demanding of the husband. They were so poor in Poland where he lived. So he said it's a terrible thing that the women are demanding of the husband that should take an extra job. They want to relax and learn a little bit at night. So the wives were demanding the husband should get another job. No, they should buy the wives jewelry and fancy clothes. If you can't afford, you can't afford. So there is an obligation. The way we sign in the Ksuba, there is an obligation on the husband to get a job and to work and to earn money and to support the wife. It's self-understood in America, the husband's going to go to law school or medical school, so it's understood the first couple of years. He's not going to be working for a living. Maybe she'll be helping to support him. So the same thing, it's understood if the husband wants to learn for smicha for a couple of years, okay. But not the oil and void, not that he should sit and learn in the koilel with his grandchildren in the same koilel, as long as the same koilel. If the wife is for it, so goes on to, hey, marvelous, okay. But if the wife is unhappy, then in the document that you get married, you spell out, I'm going to go get a job and I'm going to support you. In America, it's understood. The first couple of years, he may want to go to graduate school to get a degree to make to be able to function better in your field, in law, medicine, whatever. The same in learning. The person wants to learn to become a rabbi. Okay, it's understood. But past that, it's only if the wife really agrees, b'leiv shalem. What is ona? So ona means marital relations. My father, Olav HaShalom, came to America as a teenager. So my father told me, how did the Malamed teach the little children when they taught them Chama? How did they translate the word oina? How did they explain what it means? So the word oina in Biblical Hebrew means time. So the Malamed said, you have to spend time with your wife. She exists and you have to spend time. That's correct also. The Gemara says it's not enough just to have marital relations. The Gemara says you have to spend time carrying on a conversation with your wife. And the Gemara complains about people who barge in on a married couple's privacy, even if the wife didn't go to mikveh and they can't be together, but still, they need privacy to be able to talk together. The Mishnah says, Al tar b'sichem ho'isha. So many of the commentaries learn about goes b'ishta nida, when the wife is not able to be with the husband together. But al tar b'sichem ho'isha, but a little bit, yes, you have to spend time with your wife. The husband has an obligation to spend time with the wife, not just to satisfy the obligations of oina. You have to spend time with the wife. The Gemara tells a humorous story. I have 9 children. So my oldest daughter married a boy who was from Switzerland. He went to learn in Eretz Yisrael, Shalavim. And then a lot of the boys joined the army. So he was, I think, in the Air Force. And then because they don't stay for the full 3 years of army service, if you're from Chutz L'Aretz, they don't come in. So the army always encourages them they should leave Eretz Yisrael. So the other soldiers, the Israeli soldiers, won't see. These guys are only there a year and a half, 2 years, and we're there for 3-4 years. So they leave. So a lot of them come to America. A lot of the boys come to America. So this boy came to yeshiva, and he married my daughter. So when he first married my daughter, he didn't speak English well. He spoke Swiss German. My daughter didn't speak Swiss German. We live in Washington Heights, but my children always make fun of the Yekkes. And half of them married Yekkes. Real Yekkes. Half of them married real Yekkes. Not from the neighborhood, but other Yekkes. So when my first daughter got married, so some friends in Queens, I give a shiur in Queens for over 40 years. Aliza's father is one of the organizers of the shiur from 45 years ago. So the chevra from the Queen shiur organized a shevet brachas. So I have 9 children. So child number 8, many of you know my son Shai. So he used to be very short. And he was a character as a young child. So he used to stand up on a chair and button his jacket and hold that drasha. He was a little boy. So when my first daughter got married, so he comes to the Shevet Brachas in Queens, he says he wants to speak. He gets up on a chair, and he starts telling over his story. I must have told him that story. I don't remember. I must have told him stories from the Tanoim and Amoraim when he went to sleep. So he tells over this story from the Gemara in the Dorim, that there was a couple who came from different parts of Eretz Yisrael. So they spoke Hebrew with a different dialect. So the husband, the wife never understood what the husband was talking about. Husband would say, but he'd like to have her supper, so she would always cook the wrong thing. Because she didn't understand the dialect that he was speaking. So the husband, one day, was upset with the wife, so he gave her a candlestick, and he said she should put it on the bava. So bava means the gate. So she thought, she didn't know, bava is Aramaic. She didn't speak that dialect of Aramaic. So she saw the Tana Bava Ben Buta was walking in the street. He said something about she should plop it on the bava. He said he meant put it on the shelf by the gate. So she walked in the street and she bops it over Baba Mabuta's head. So he said, good morning, what's this all about? So she said, my husband told me I should bop you over the head. So he understood, the Tana understood the husband meant something else. So he said, he gave her a blessing, she's a wonderful wife, that she listens to the husband. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam should bless you with healthy children, everything should go well. So my son got up and he says, his new brother-in-law speaks Swiss German, he doesn't speak English, and his sister speaks English, so they're not going to understand each other. By now, my daughter didn't want her in-laws to speak in her presence, she wouldn't understand, so now she learned already Swiss German. And my son already speaks English very well. But now they do. Then I do understand each other. But they first got married. They didn't really understand each other. You know, in the yeshiva, there was always a problem for many years. Rabbi Soloveitchik realized, Rabbi Soloveitchik always gave the shiur in Yiddish. And then one day, there was one student who davened in Spanish, Portuguese, sure he never heard a word of Yiddish. Danny Greer. So he came to Rabbi Soloveitchik's class one day and he says he can't understand the shiur. He's going to go to a different class. So Rabbi Soloveitchik met him in the basement and he said, what do you mean you didn't understand Yiddish? You don't understand the words. He said, no. He was going to leave the shiur. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said, don't leave so quickly. Try it out again tomorrow. Tomorrow the shiur was in English. From that time on, the shiur was in English. So a lot of students would come to the shiur. They all wanted to go to Rabbi Soloveitchik's shiur because they didn't understand Yiddish. So Rabbi Gorelick was a very colorful Rebbe, so he would say, if a Frenchman falls in love with a Chinese girl, how do they communicate? The answer is the language of love is international. If you really love the Torah, you already understand the Yiddish here. They don't love the Torah, that's why. So that's what that's what my son was blessing my children, that even though the Gemara has the story about the husband and the wife who didn't speak the same language, and they had a problem of shalom bayis, he was blessing them that they should be successful in marriage, they should learn to understand each other. Yesterday we concluded the Sedra. We read about Yitzchak sends away his son Yaakov to marry a girl from the family. He doesn't want him to marry Benois Canaan. Both parents, Rivka and Yitzchak, they send away the son Yaakov. He should marry someone from the family. So Esav was a character. So he heard that the parents want he should marry from the family. So he married a daughter of Yishmael. That's not what the Yitzchak and Rivka meant. So the pasuk says he married a girl, Mochlas Bas Yishmael. So there are two different traditions how to pronounce the name. With the comments or a patek, is it Mochalas or is it Machalas? So the Maharil Diskin points out that you have different midrashim, which seem to have a different reading of the pasuk. So the last Rashi, I think, on Parshas told us, quotes a medrash. Most of the Rashi's on Chumash are quoting from the Tanoim and Amoraim, unless he talks about Dikduk, that's not in the Tanoim and Amoraim, that's on his own. So most of the Rashi's on Chumash is quoting from the Chazal. So Rashi quotes a medrash that had the reading Machalas, Milosh and Machla, a krankite. So the pasuk says, Al Nashav Loli Yisho, he was married to two wicked witches before. Now he married a third witch. And this Machlas is Gben Nocha Machla, Hoshev Risha Al Vishasa, another wicked wife. That's the reading with Machalas with a patach. But then there's another reading that reads Mochalas. Mochalas is Milosh and Mechila. So that's a famous passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi that there are three people, Shloshinim Cholam Lahem Abba Nisayim, that three people's sins will be forgiven, means if they do tshuva. If you don't do tshuva, you never get a forgiveness of the sins. The Rambam writes in the first perek in Hilchas Tshuva that when someone deserves Mises Bezdin, so the Mishnah says, the Bezdin encourages the man to say vidui and to do tshuva before we put him to death. So tehimi sosu kapora kol abanoisai. So he'll get a mechila. If he doesn't do tshuva, he won't get a mechila. When a person gets malchus, so we encourage him that he should say vidui. When a person brings a korma chatas or a nosham, so the Rambam says you have to say vidui, you have to do tshuva. You don't do tshuva, you don't get a mechila savainas. And there's a machleika satanaim whether Yom Kippur is a mechaper if the person didn't do tshuva. It's nafkamina halacha lamaisa also, not just the bezin shalmaila. This is a shaila for the bezin shalmata also. Halacha lamaisa, the Mishnah has increases. So the Rambam's position is, not everybody agrees, the Rambam's position is we should pass like that. Tani Yom Kippur is only mechaper with tshuva. And the same thing the Pnei Yeshua writes at the end of Ksuba is that one who walks Dal HaRamas in Eretz Yisrael gets Mechilas Avainas. So it's understood only if he does tshuva. You don't do tshuva, not so Yom Kippur. So the Yom HaChuppah, the Yom HaChasana, we say he married a girl Mochalas, that he get a Mechilas Avainas. It means if he does tshuva, if the Chosn Kala say vidui, if they do tshuva, they'll get a Mechilas Avainas. So what is that Mechilas Avainas all about? Why should it be so? So the Rambam writes in Hilchas Tshuva, when a person does tshuva, he can say honestly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Ish Acher, I'm a changed person, I'm a different person, I don't have the same perspective on life that I had when I did the Avera, I'm a different person. So then he can honestly request of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't deserve the punishment. He used to be a different person yesterday, and now he did tshuva, I don't deserve the punishment, Ani Ish Acher. So if a couple gets married, and the Chosn Kala both plan to change their attitude, single people are usually out for themselves. Some single people are big bali chesed, they're always doing everything for everybody else. Some people are very altruistic, always doing only for other people. But most single people are out for themselves. So if a couple gets married and they change their outlook on life, and now they're interested in helping out each other, and they can honestly say, Ani Ish Acher, so then one can get a mechilas avonos. That's why we have minhagim, that many have the minig, that the chosn wears a kittel under the chuppah, like we wear a kittel on Yom Kippur. In Europe, it wasn't such a widespread minig, but in America, it became more common to wear a kittel. My father told me he attended many weddings in Europe when he was a child. He said they didn't all wear a kittel. Most of them didn't wear a kittel where he came from. He came from a Chassidish section. He said they didn't wear a kittel. And then we have a minig that the chosn kala fast, like on Yom Kippur, that this helps to get a mechilas avonos. It's interesting, at the beginning of the Reform movement, middle 1800s, so first, the Reform movement began during the lifetime of the Chassam Sofer, Rebbe Kivege. So they were fighting Reform a little bit, and then later on, after the Chassam Sofer passed away, it became a bigger battle. So the Maram Shik, who was a student of the Chassam Sofer, with the Ksav Sofer, the son of Chassam Sofer, they were leading the battle against him. So the Reform, first they started picking up minhagim. So they decided they're going to do away with Kol Nidre. What did it bother them, Kol Nidre? So they said it's a Chil Hashem that there are Jewish businessmen who agreed to deals and then they don't live up to their obligations. And then they say, because they said Kol Nidre, I said, Kol Nidre, any neder we take in the future shouldn't be binding. So they said it's a chilul Hashem that the goyim know that the Jewish businessmen are dishonest because they all said Kol Nidre. We have to do every Kol Nidre. So the Maram Shik is very upset. He's more upset that there was a point where they were doing mixed marriages, intermarriages between non-Jews and Jews. The Maram Shik is more concerned about the Kol Nidre than about the intermarriage. He said, this intermarriage, Dick, this is not going to last too long. That's going to fall apart. He didn't predict the future correctly. And he has to fight. The battle has to be about the Kol Nidre because they're going to get away with this. So there was a point also where the Reform decided to do away with the kittel under the chuppah. The goyim are going to laugh at us, that we have such funny minhagim, ridiculous, when the goyim are going to laugh. So the Maram Shik writes in his tshuva, Amaisu Shehoya, that there was one of the non-Jewish governors of a whole section in Hungary wanted to see what a Jewish wedding is all about. So he came to a wedding and he sat next to the rabbi. He said, he wants the rabbi to explain every step of the way. So the rabbi explains why he's wearing a kitlis, a day of atonement, forgiveness, because he changed his hair. So the Goyish governor said, what a beautiful minig that is. What a beautiful practice. We have a lot of beautiful minhagim based on beautiful sources. We don't appreciate our religion. We don't appreciate our dinim and our minhagim. My wife showed me around 20 years ago on the internet, there was an essay that was written by an Arab businessman who lives in America now, and had Jewish business associates, and he always knew that in September there's the high holidays and there's the Day of Atonement. He never knew what it was. So once he finally asked the Jewish businessman, what is it all about? What do you do on Yom Kippur? What do you do on Day of Atonement? So he said, we go to the synagogue and we clap al chet. We admit to the Baruch Shalom that we made mistakes, and we promise we're going to try to fix the mistakes. We're going to try not to repeat the Averis in the future. So the Arab said, what a beautiful minig. What a beautiful practice. By us, we're embarrassed to admit that we made a mistake. We'll never admit. That's not manly. That's a Schwachkeit. You admit you made a mistake. So we cover up on the mistakes, and then we call it because we never do tshuva. So we keep on covering up. We keep on doing more Averis and covering up. Ein ledover so. He said, that's beautiful. We should all adapt that. We should all say vida. We should all do tshuva. And we should admit that we made mistakes. We have a lot of beautiful minhag. I remember Rav Soloveitchik once mentioned that there's a book written in German by one of the famous German philosophers where he was so taken by the Malchus Reine Schäufer's Nusach of the Tefillah. He put in the whole Nusach in his book, in the original Hebrew. He put the whole thing in Hebrew. But we don't even know the translation. We don't pay attention. We don't even look at the translation of Malchus Reine Schäufer's. And this non-Jewish philosopher was so taken by it, he saw the whole text of the Tefillah. We have beautiful minhagim, beautiful mitzvahs. We have a beautiful form of marriage. The husband and the wife are supposed to blend in together. Now there's a later shtick that the wives don't take on the husband's name, the family name. That's not right. Each one wants to remain on their own. They don't want to blend in together. One of my sons married a girl from Montreal. So I think they're still under Napoleonic law that by law the husband is supposed to take on the wife's family name. But either the husband takes on the wife's family name or the wife takes on the husband's name. If no one takes on the other one's name, it means that each one remains on their own. So it's not on the Yish Acher. So you're not blending in together. They're Baruch Shalom Meit Chava from Adam. They should blend in together. The relationship between the Bnei Yisrael and the Baruch Shalom is described in Tanakh as one of a marriage. So we say in the davening, Shimcha Agor of HaKadosh Oleinu Karosa. We took on, as the last name, the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are Am Hashem. He took on our last name. He's called Elokei Yisrael. Each one of us took on the other one's name to show that Kodesh Baruch Hu v'Yisrael Achad, we are. It's a relationship like one of a marriage. I think if we will, there are svarim where they point out all the obligations, that all the reciprocal obligations between the husband and the wife. Husband has an obligation. You have to spend money on your wife. And a lot of times the friction in the marriage is because of money issues. So there are dinim about husband, if the husband can afford it. He's takamuchayev to spend a lot of money on his wife, and that's his gula for Ashiris. We should all be blessed with shalom bais and healthy children for many years to come. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to see you.
Good.